There's so many things in the history of esoterica, in religion and mythology, that once you look at them from this perspective, they take on a whole different meaning. A lot of things have happened since the last time we talked that were scary at the time to think about, and now they've happened and we're used to it. I mean, we really do already have the New World Order. The federal government is part of a global government, and they're just trying to impose it on us now. It's a question of, are the American people stupid enough to go along with that when they don't have to? This is, I think, the part of the problem. We're all waiting for it to happen. It's happening now. And there's nothing to wait for.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. This is BOA Audio Season 8, back coming at you live, and we've got an awesome guest on the line here tonight. I'm a little concerned because every time I read her stuff or talk to her on the show after we're done, I always feel like I'm playing checkers and she's playing chess. I mean, that is how intense her research is. It blows me away. I cannot believe it. I always feel like I'm trying to catch up. So it's going to be a fun interview. It's going to be a challenging one. I'm talking about, of course, prolific esoteric writer Tracy Twyman, back on BOA Audio. She's the author of The Merovingian Mythos, Solomon's Treasure, Mind Control, Sex Slaves, and the CIA, Money Grows on the Tree of Knowledge, and she's got a big event coming up. The Mysteries of Baphomet Cruise. That's going to happen this April, so we're going to talk about that and a whole bunch more. Welcome back to the show, Tracy. Thanks for taking part in the live aspect of BOA Audio. Tracy, can you hear me?
Yeah, okay, I can hear you now. You know what? Sorry about that. I think I had the show playing on in another window on my computer, and I'm talking to you on Skype.
These things happen.
Collage going, okay? I thought you were like doing a Clyde Lewis thing, that there was this collage of my voice and your voice, and I was wondering when it was all going to end. And as it turns out, it was just my fault. So sorry about that.
No worries. I'd like to hear that collage now. It sounds good.
It was really trippy. I thought you had worked really hard on this, so you had edited all these things together.
No, there was a nice little musical intro, but I wasn't involved in all that.
Okay.
So you got a lot of projects. I don't know how much of my intro you heard, but I mentioned all this stuff you've done in the past, this upcoming event. Last time we talked, it was April 25th, 2011. I looked it up. That's when you were talking about Money Grows on the Tree of Knowledge. So 2.5 years since we heard from you last. What have you been up to? You know, what's been going on at Camp Twyman?
Well, you know, I mean, it's in my life when I've gone through a lot of transitions, and so I have a lot of projects I'm working on, but as you mentioned, got a cruise dedicated to the topic of Baphomet coming up, and a companion book, perhaps even two. I haven't decided if I'm going to split it into two books or not yet, but we got these things that are going to come out before then, so the cruise is in April next year. I'll get a little bit personal just to let people know why the heck have I not done anything, produced anything new to purchase in the last 2.5 years. I switched husbands. I left the one husband who, you know, I loved dearly and helped me a lot with all my projects throughout the years. We had known each other my whole life. But we had problems. I had another man. I left the one husband to go to the other one, and unfortunately, the first husband ended up killing himself.
Whoa!
So I did that.
And you cut out there for a minute,
with that.
And then I just got whoa! Oh my God! I'm sorry. Yikes!
Yeah, so there was that. I mean, I had to deal with that. And then I got remarried. And then I had a baby with the new guy. And, you know, this is all new stuff for me. So I've been dealing with all these personal crises and things like that. And but all the while, I have been working on a new project related to Baphomet. I've been working on with this one for quite some time. I got to say that, like, Baphomet is probably the biggest topic that I've dealt with in my whole life. I think it's kind of the sum of everything that I've been dealing with my whole life. And so this should be, you know, the magnum opus of my career so far when it comes out. And,
wow.
You know, I'm not setting it up too much for failure there, but that's what I'm expecting of
yeah,
myself
really
anyway. But...
Interesting, interesting.
So,
well, I was going to say, you know, you've been talking about Baphomet for quite some time throughout your career.
Right, right. And but I've just, you know, okay, I think we talked about this before in previous
mm-hmm.
interviews, that I do kind of have a knack for getting into things right when, you know, a couple of years before they really explode onto the consciousness of the public. And I don't know if I mean, I'm sure I have some influence there, and I also think I just happen to tap into, the zeitgeist right before
yeah,
it emerges. So anyway, Baphomet, you know, yeah, I talked a little bit about this topic in Merovingian Mythos because, you know, that book was a lot about the Priory of Zion and the Knights Templar. And, of course, you know, Baphomet is the idol or the demon that the Knights Templar were accused of worshiping and supposedly was behind all of their success, their financial success. So, and I think one of the most interesting things I said about it in that book was I said, you know, that maybe, okay, some of the characters in that whole saga with the Priory of Zion, Berenger Saunier out in Rennes-le-Château, France, some of these people, I think that they were tapped into Baphomet. I think that Baphomet is like this, I think Baphomet, I guess I said it like this. I think that all of Western esoterica, the Western occult tradition, really comes from this Baphomet tradition. You know, all of these groups like the OTO, the Rosicrucians, Freemasons, they all trace themselves back to the Knights Templar, and they all seem to have this, what I would call the influence of Baphomet. It's like a Gnostic tradition, as I've shown in my writings, that's all tied to Baphomet.
Okay. All right. See, this is what I'm talking about when I introduced you. You're playing chess here. I've been playing checkers all these years as I get more into this talking to you. What is, for the people at home and me... who are unaware, give me the thumbnail on Baphomet, because it really, like I was looking at your page here about the cruise, and you call it you're going to talk about the history and meaning of the meme known as Baphomet, but then later you sort of talk about him as a god of sorts. So what exactly is this thing, in a way? I know it's kind of an abstract concept in a lot of ways, but, you know, help enlighten me.
Yeah, okay, so let's start off with what we know. You know, historically, this word pops up around 1307, or a little bit before then, when the Knights Templar are about to take their big fall. They were heresy and engaging in pagan rites, I guess you would call it, by ex-members who had, you know, were dissatisfied or had been kicked out of the order. And so, you know, they went to the authorities and said, hey, these guys are, you know, they supposedly it's a Christian order, right? You know, created by the Pope or chartered
right.
by the Pope. And they're
messing around with some other god.
Right, right. They're at the forefront of the Crusades. You know, they are the face, public face on the Crusades. And yet, you know, here it comes out that they're actually involved in all of these sort of satanic rites. And it really sounded like the way it was described, it was like exactly what you would expect a satanic ritual to be. They're supposedly kissing the behind of a goat and involved in like homosexual orgies. Some of the stories said there were babies that were aborted and sacrificed, blood drank, things like that.
Jesus.
But the really specific thing, because these stories first start coming out with, like I said, dissatisfied members, and then they get arrested, you know, and accused of all of these crimes, and then people start getting tortured, and they come out with even more confessions. And the thing is that you see continuity with all of these stories. I mean, they all kind of come together. They all kind of tie each other. And and they all have to do with this. So many of them mention this idol that supposedly was in all of the secret temples where these rituals are happening. Because you get the impression like there's probably one big idol that is at maybe the Templar headquarters, and then there's probably different versions of it
like
based
a
on the
statue.
Same idea in all of the like little temples all over the place with little idols. And what it is that they say this thing is called Baphomet, and it's a head of some sort. So it's either a skull or like a mummified head is what it sounds more like. And sometimes they said that it had a goat's face or that it had three faces or two. So, you know, there's always something a little bit different about it. And they usually describe it as being terrifying to look at. This is the most horrible thing you could look at. And then that supposedly, you know, the priests of these rituals were talking to this head and receiving wisdom from it. And then they would touch it with cords that were wrapped around their bodies, and they would receive power from it.
Oh my God.
The confessors say, because, you know, at the time, I mean, this is probably the real reason for the downfall of the Templars, is they were full force in Europe at that point. They had the money. They had invented
banks. Right, it was like a political takedown.
Right, yeah, because they had all the crown heads of Europe indebted to them with this, you know, they had invented the fake credit system. Of fractional reserve lending. They had invented checking. And so they got all the heads of Europe indebted to them, and even the Pope is afraid of them at this point because they have so much power. And so, yeah, that's probably why they were taken down. But it's also, according to the knights that were confessing these things, they said that Baphomet is the reason why they got rich and powerful in the first place. This is the source of their wealth and also the fertility of their crops and the success of all of their endeavors.
Mm.
So, you know, on the one hand, you could say, like, maybe the crown heads, maybe the Pope didn't really get why they were rich, you know. Maybe they didn't understand banking, which, you know, they could
just invented
it. And they didn't understand how they created all of this wealth, how they were able to multiply their wealth through banking, through loaning out money that they didn't even necessarily have on hand.
Right, like
so
a dark science,
you know,
in a way. So they would have a hard time kind of they would almost look like that old expression. They would kind of see it as magic almost. They didn't quite get how they were doing it.
Exactly, and that's probably what encouraged people to think, oh, well, they are worshiping the devil. You know, that makes perfect sense. But, you know, at the same time, let us not dismiss this because, you know, it's quite possible they didn't just come up with this idea out of nothing. And, you know, maybe they did contact something from the other side, some sort of intel told them how to do this stuff. And furthermore, you know, it's always been believed that you can get luck and power from, you know, God or any other type of invisible entity. So I think it may be both things going on here. And in fact, that's sort of the tactic angle I chose to take when I was writing about Baphomet. It's like, what if this is the power behind our, you know, what has become now the modern system of banking and the modern way of gaining wealth? And because, you know, as we discussed in previous interviews, I talked about in my Solomon's Treasure book, I wrote about how modern economics is alchemy. And I analyzed the whole system itself, how it works, and also even symbols and images on the dollar bill currency. And I demonstrated that they all reflect this idea of, you know, they have magical emblems of fertility on them. They all have, or at least the dollar bill has things on it that indicate alchemy. You know, it's telling you where the power of the dollar comes from on the dollar bill itself.
There's a connection, like a magic and money connection.
Yes. So I did theorize in that book that, you know, since people in secret societies have influenced history, and especially in the United States, and especially the United States now has influenced the global economic system like no one else has before, you know, we're kind of playing the role in the world that the Knights Templar were playing in Europe back then. So I theorized, you know, well, what if there is this sort of secret of Baphomet, whatever you want to call it, this thing that's, you know, it's the secret of alchemy, making something out of nothing, of magic, and really it's the secret at the heart of the modern economy now.
Yeah.
You know, so I wrote Solomon's Treasure with that perspective. Then a few years later, I wrote, I guess, what's my most recent book, The Money Grows on the Tree of Knowledge, where I kind of just took it a little bit further, analyzing this symbolism of alchemy and Baphomet and money. So,
So now we're at the pinnacle of the search, if you will, which is the, as you said, the magnum opus that's coming out.
And well, and what's happened since? Because I was on 2011, like you said. Mm-hmm. What has happened since is that Baphomet is like a big deal now. You know, like.
Really? I haven't seen it too many
times. It's about Baphomet.
Okay.
Oh, well, no. You have to watch rap videos, okay? You have to watch, like, pop music and rap videos.
I love pop
music. You have
to
also then...
Interesting.
You mean, like, modern pop music you like?
Yeah.
Like, stuff Radio Disney? I mean...
No, I don't listen to Radio Disney. I'm not a tween. But I do enjoy, you know, Katy Perry, I guess. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Whatever's on the radio, I listen to the top 40 station of the day, so I know what's hip with the kids.
I see. Well, you're probably doing better than me. I don't know that much about what's hip with the kids, but I try.
Is this about Lady Gaga?
Well, it could be about Lady. You know, she's one of them. the thing is,
she is one of them.
That the most popular conspiracy theory now on the internet is this idea that all of these pop stars and rappers are involved in the Illuminati.
Yeah, I've seen this.
Okay, supposedly they all sell their soul to the Illuminati, well, to the devil rituals. And in exchange for that, they get their wealth and their fame. And then, so the people that are analyzing all of these videos and records and stuff, the lyrics and everything, and they see all this symbolism. They see all this sort of confessional stuff where the pop stars are telling the world about the selling their soul, the pain of being separated from God, all of the horrible things that they've had to do to get their fame. And the conspiracy theorists, just about every one of these articles or videos about this subject, over and over again, they see Baphomet. They see goat heads in people's jewelry, and sometimes it's there. Sometimes it really is there, and then sometimes it's just like anything that's a horned animal or implied. Sometimes they see it in like the grain on the wood.
Okay, you're kind of observing that that's become popular. Right? Do you really think that they've joined up with Baphomet, or have they kind of adopted the coolness of how it's supposed to be taboo, if you will.
You know, okay.
Like, is it marketing or is it actual Baphomet love?
I think it started out with actual Baphomet love. You do see it with Jay-Z, for sure. You know, he wears the T-shirts and stuff that have Baphomet on them and other, like, Masonic stuff. Because he wants people to think he's into the Illuminati, right? And
he wants people to think he's in the Illuminati, probably, right?
That's
not
what
even
I'm saying.
Into it. In it. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That's what I'm saying is I think maybe he started this as far as telling the public about it, being open about it. Yeah. And he has all these like little minions that they're, I've seen some of them going into. Wiz Khalifa is one of them.
Oh,
Kanye West does it a little bit. I don't know.
Okay. Anyway. I'm familiar with these people, yes.
Yeah, right. So
weird. Yeah. Go on.
Okay. So I guess what I'm saying is I think that this thing has really exploded. I don't want to be one of these people that thinks that everything revolves around them. But I honestly wonder if people would have put together this connection, really, of you can get rich and famous through Baphomet, if I hadn't written those two books. Because I think that the whole thing kind of started to get spread around over the last 3 or 4 years. And I started to get these hits on my website, a lot of them, strangely, from Africa, different countries in Africa.
Weird.
Where they're looking for... They want to know how to join Baphomet. Like, they think that Baphomet is a secret. And then lots of searches on how to get rich through Baphomet. So I feel like people really want to know this now. And I don't know that I can really give you a lesson on personal finance and how to get rich through Baphomet. But I can analyze what has been going on, how other people have used the symbolism and the ideas that are associated with Baphomet. And what it is I think it just really comes down to alchemy, because I think Baphomet really is sort of the living embodiment as a spirit of alchemy. Like he is, you could identify him with the philosopher's stone of alchemy. You could identify him with the power that makes alchemical transformations happen. And it's not just me saying this. Of course, the Templars never wrote anything, you know, about Baphomet, so no one really knows what they thought about it. We only have pictures. There's some pictures put in a book by this guy named Joseph von Hammer Purgstall. He was an Orientalist in the 1800s. And he put out this book that has these pictures in it that supposedly came from Templar preceptories, from their properties, and from their, like, their secret ritual chambers and stuff. And they're really interesting. And they definitely look, for one thing, they seem to depict these types of orgies, sex orgies and stuff that they were accused of being involved in. And they look very much actually like almost identical to the types of sex orgies that Gnostic cults were accused of engaging in, which is what Purgstall said. He said that he thought that the Templars got into a weird Gnostic cult called the Ophites, where they believe that, the serpent in the Garden of Eden was the hero, and Jesus is really part of, part of that tradition.
So the idea is kind of that Baphomet is just part of a smaller tributary of a greater stream, I guess you could say. Is that kind of the idea?
No. Let me get to my other point. Was that
okay?
We don't really know what the Templars used Baphomet for because they didn't write it down, but the tradition of Baphomet got elaborated on over the years. And really, in the 1800s, I would say, is when it exploded. You had this Purgstall book I talked about, but also Eliphas Levi and this other fellow named Stanislaus Guarita, I think is how you might pronounce it. These were writers about the occult. And especially Levi, I would say, really defined this thing. And I don't know where he got his information either. You know, he like they're writing from the occult tradition as though they just know this stuff.
Yeah.
You don't know where they got it. But Eliphas Levi said that this is what Baphomet is. Baphomet is the power behind an alchemical transformation or a magical transformation. That when you try to make something happen magically, this is the thing that makes it happen. And also that this is sort of the sacred wisdom associated with Gnosticism. Like, Gnosticism is all about downloading directly from God, a godly wisdom, you know. And so it's not just knowledge, it's something sort of transcendental, beyond knowledge even. And Levi was saying that this is what Baphomet is as well. So it's like a downloadable form of wisdom, and it's a power, a magical power. So he's the one that Levi is the one that published for the first time in these images of Baphomet that
okay.
are so familiar to people that look into it today. I think he based it on the Pergstall stuff, because in the Pergstall book where he has the images from the Templars, some of them show this being that has a goat head and then a human body that's both male and female. And that's and wings also. And so this is what Levi showed. He says this is what Baphomet is. Baphomet is not just a head, but this is what his whole body looks like. And that he's this kind of fusion of all different opposing powers or energies. So that's why he's both male and female. That's why he's both man and beast. And then you see him also, like, pointing up and pointing down. He's got the waxing and waning moon on either side of him.
He's like
an alien. Yeah, yeah. And then going up his front, he's got a caduceus with the two serpents wrapped around a pole.
Oh.
So that's alchemy. That shows the alchemical power right there.
Okay. Now, let me circle back to kind of what I was trying to – I guess I was confused that – when I mentioned when I made the tortured metaphor of the stream. So I guess what I'm asking is, we only really this Baphomet, as you call it, the meme, the word, if you will, that we trace that just back to the Knights Templar. That didn't we don't have any records of that floating around anywhere else in prehistory before it emerged out of their camp, right?
Not really. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, a lot of people have tried to analyze what the word means, but I don't think it was used before them. And in fact, I think that Baphomet is something that they made. Like, it had other elements to it that already existed. Then they took them and made something that was created from disparate parts, like a Frankenstein sort of thing. You know, they take all these different parts, they put them together, connect them to this head idol, and then utilize it for magical purposes. So anyway, go back to your stream question or what you were leading up to. Go ahead.
Hey, be nice. that was
what?
Kind of the question, but I guess do you think, additionally, beyond that, do you think that the, you know, you're saying they pulled it from all these different stuff, it was kind of a Frankenstein monster. Do you think the Baphomet idea and the principles behind all that, the alchemy, was part of just a larger, greater stream of knowledge that just goes back even further? Do you know what I mean? So maybe they took it and called it Baphomet when it was also really, it was a lot of the ideals of alchemy that were parts of other stuff.
Yes, yes. So I think that they got these ideas of alchemy from a Gnostic cult. There's also elements of, for lack of a better term, because I have like several chapters about this thing, and I don't. And it's really complicated.
Well, let me.
I would say that there's Islamic elements in it as well, and then this is what I think is key, and this is what I would say is the origin of it. And Eliphas Levi is the person that really kind of figured it out when he shows the sigil of Baphomet that has the goat head inside of a pentagram.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, that's surrounded by two words in Hebrew. It's one of them is Samael, and the other is Lilith. So these are two Jewish tradition. They talk about them in the Kabbalah, in the Zohar.
Okay.
Tradition. Yeah. Well, this is key. This will help you understand why. Mm-hmm. Baphomet is both male and female, I think, and why he's a demon, is, Lilith and Samael, according to the Kabbalists, they were both those are the male and female sides of the serpent in the Garden of Eden. They're saying that the serpent was not really a snake so much. She was like a being, actually like a primordial, almost human being that existed before Adam and Eve were created. And it was hermaphroditic, described as kind of they're always locked in sexual union, the Lilith and Samael. And so, but supposedly something happened to this being, and they got separated, and they can't have sex anymore because of some sort of damage that happened to Samael when they got separated. So it says that they can't have sex anymore except through an intermediary, and they call the intermediary Tananiver. And I don't know exactly what it is, but I have a theory. Because originally I thought it was, like a dildo or something, really. Because I was thinking about.
I'm glad you went there before I had to, so thank you.
Well, about Isis and Horus, how she, Osiris, her husband died, but she still wanted to have a baby. All of his pieces got torn apart, but she put them together and created this, again, a golem of some sort, a Frankenstein husband to breed with. But he was, mm-hmm. she couldn't find his penis in one that she used. And somehow she was able to conceive her son Horus through that. So that's what I was thinking when I first heard this. I thought, well, maybe it was something like that. But then as I read more of the traditions of Lilith, and two things. One, that supposedly Lilith seduced Adam after he was created, and she was his first wife before Eve was created. And they had a bad relationship. She ended up getting cast out of the Garden of Eden. And after that point, she was very angry at Adam and cursed his bloodline. And supposedly, from that moment onward, she has been visiting the sons of Adam in their dreams at night, trying to seduce them. She's a succubus.
Mm-hmm.
And that she uses their semen at night to breed her own demons.
My goodness.
Demons go on to curse even more men in the night. So this is one of the things Lilith does. Samael, meanwhile, there's a tradition that he seduced Eve, that he's the actual father of Cain, and there's a whole bloodline that comes from Cain of like semi-demonic human beings. And then there's a whole tradition in the Zohar of that there's several different, basically, they were saying there's several characters in the Old Testament that are really Lilith in human form, or that she seduced one of the patriarchs, one of the main characters in the Old Testament, and then the child from that is like a half-demon child. So
okay.
there's several characters in the Bible that you think are humans that actually aren't. They're actually partially demonic. So this is an
Whoa.
Interesting thing
I like that.
To take into consideration that for one thing, you've got the father and mother of these hybrid races. And I think the point is just because there was a dispensation given to Adam, by God, the earth itself is, supposedly under his dominion and the humans that are descended from him. But the serpent has a claim on that as well, an older claim, and the serpent feels supplanted. And so when it says in Genesis that there will be enmity between the seed of Eve and the seed of the serpent, I think that really is referencing this plot throughout the centuries to try to resupplant, take over those positions of dominion that the children of Adam have. As I've written about in the past, in Merovingian mythos and stuff, I talked about this bloodline of David. I talked about all these sacred royal bloodlines and how,
right.
for one thing, the bloodlines seem to go back to something more than human.
Mm-hmm.
And for another thing, that the role that they have on Earth, ruling from thrones, is really something that was given to them by God. Whatever you might think about it, it's actually, this role was sort of carved out for them. It's sort of a continuation of the dominion that was given to Adam. And so I think that this serpent and his bloodline or her bloodline is also trying to get in there, and so that his or her descendants can actually be, in that position as well in the future. Maybe, and at any rate, the Zohar talks about this Tananiver, this intermediary that allows Samael and Lilith to enjoy each other sexually again. And I think they're talking about this idea of possession, that they can, these spirits can possess people and breed through them. And so, yes, so I think this is really, you may kind of get at the heart of sex magic, too. You know, this is really maybe what it's all about. I think Eliphas Levi may have very well been right, that Baphomet is this fusion of Samael and Lilith, and that somehow the Templars were able to tap into that and capture it and actually utilize it through the symbol that is Baphomet.
Okay, exactly. I guess to retorture the stream analogy. So really, it goes back. There's a much larger picture at work here, I guess, is the real point I was trying to make. And Baphomet is but one part of the whole thing.
Right. I guess that's certainly true. And yeah, what the stream is, what is the stream goes back to the Garden of Eden and the
right.
serpent,
mm-hmm.
and which is what everything comes back to in the end, isn't it? When we're dealing with occultism, especially Western
that's
occultism,
pretty much true.
Always
you're right.
Back to that.
Yeah, exactly. And this idea of forbidden knowledge, of secret knowledge, of ways of doing things, of alchemy. So it's all they're all sort of like running under the current of all this stuff. It's very it's spooky, but I don't know why it's spooky, but it is spooky. So
well, that's definitely the impression I got from like the confessions of people who, you know, supposedly had seen the Baphomet in the Templar rituals. This thing really freaked them out.
Mm.
And, okay, one of the things I wrote about in the Merovingian Mythos was the story of Berengar Saunier, the priest in the town in southern France, Rennes-les-Châteaux, who became wealthy all of a sudden, mysteriously, at the end of the 1800s. The story is somehow tied in with the Holy Grail and the Priory of Zion, the bloodline of the Merovingians. Somehow he discovered some sort of secret supposedly related to that. That somehow made him wealthy. Then he redesigned his whole church to communicate that message in coded form to other occultists who would be able to understand it.
Yeah, a place
and, and then so at the end of his life, they brought in another priest to give him last rites and at his deathbed, you know. And so the priest goes in there and talks to him and comes out a few minutes later and refused to give him last rites. And he was like white as a ghost, the other priest was. And he'd seen something that freaked him out so much. He never smiled again, it said, for the rest of his life. That he was just completely transformed as a human. And so I wrote in the book that I said, did he see the manifestation of Baphomet? Is it possible that this is what Saunier was tapped into that made him wealthy all of a sudden?
Hmm.
And then, you know, that he tries to communicate his alchemical secrets of wealth through his redesigning his church. And maybe, you know, when he was dying, the spirit started to overtake him, and it became obvious to people who were in the room with him. The townspeople, you know, in this town is like a less than 100 people, and they were all devoted to this priest, and it seems like they were all in on it with him somehow. Like it was a cult, and he was the leader of it. And at the end of his life, when he was dead, they put his body on display in front of his house. And all the townspeople came by and took tassels off of his robe to just get magical power from it, basically. So I think they may have known that he had this secret, that he was tapped into the powers of Baphomet. One of the ways he did make money, I mean, there's some record of how he made at least some of his money, and it was through selling masses. It was simony. You know, he was selling masses to anyone who would pay for anything that they wanted. And it's like he was basically pimping himself out as a magician. And again, I think that we're talking about this alchemical power that the Templars were tapped into.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm thinking that this is it. You know, I mean, the Freemasons, of course, they you know, they've been through so much. They get accused of so many things. So they, you know, typically don't want to talk about, you know, the fact that their rituals, particularly the Scottish Rite rituals, very much are, you know, are like a weird version of a magical rite and of ceremonial magic. And they do talk about alchemy, especially if you read Albert Pike's book about all the rituals of the Scottish Rite. He really starts to get into alchemy, and he does talk about Baphomet a little bit. So I think that, you know, not every Freemason knows about this, not your average Freemason, but I do think that this is something that was really important to them, too. And I think that it was something that was known about by, you know, a lot of the founding fathers of the United States and also throughout the history of the United States. I think that the Freemasons that were involved in designing the $1 bill, for instance, and who were involved in kind of retweaking the economic system around 1932-33 when they took us off the gold standard and stuff, I think that those people kind of knew about it too. So then the question is, does Jay-Z know about it? I doubt it, frankly.
Well, who knows? Maybe he's ordered your books. Maybe he's listening right now. What's going on, Jay-Z? The entertainment industry, you're talking about that whole thing. Actually, I want to ask you about this, but I don't want to put you in a corner here. But on the website, you mentioned for the Mysteries of Baphomet Cruise that you're going to talk about for the first time ever. So you don't have to – I don't want you to give away everything, you know – that you want to talk about on the cruise, but you say you're going to talk about for the first time ever your own personal contact with Baphomet and your experience doing ritual magic under his tutelage as part of a secret order. That alone is enough to make me want to go on this cruise. So tell us about the cruise and then package it into what I just asked you about with this personal contact thing, because that sounds like it's going to be mind-blowing.
Okay. Yes, well, I guess I've talked a little bit about this in some radio shows, but I'm going to reveal stuff for the first time on this cruise. The cruise happens, the 12th through the 19th, departing from New Orleans, going to several locations in the Caribbean. And on board, I'm going to be doing lectures on the days that we're at sea and stuff. In greater detail, these concepts of Baphomet, and the other older concepts that it's based on. Just a little bit of my own personal experience, because honestly, this is kind of how it started for me. Why have I written so much about this topic? I could have easily ignored it and written about other stuff. And I didn't, and even though I knew about it when I knew a little bit about it when I first started off writing about the Holy Grail and things like that when I wrote Merovingian Mythos. The fact is that I didn't really pay that much attention. Like I just knew that this was a story related to the Knights Templar. And I knew that the Satanists and the OTO had utilized the image of Baphomet later.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think that much about it. It was just not really on my mind all that much. I was really trying at the time. Let's see, this started out maybe 2001. I was still in my early 20s. I was doing Dagobert's Revenge. I hadn't written, which is the magazine I used to do. I hadn't written any books yet. And I was trying to just explore this topic as far as I could. I mean, I was researching the Holy Grail, the mystery of the Holy Grail, Rinlay Chateau, and the Priory of Zion. Mm-hmm. That was my focus at the time. And so I just really wanted to know more about that. At the time, mainly my husband at the time, Brian Albert. I was hooked up with the Boyd Rice, the writer. We were writing stuff together at the time. And a few other people. And we had this group that we called the Ordo Lapsus Exilis. And other than agreeing to form this group together, and sort of announcing it to the world, we hadn't done much with it. It was the sort of the order that was behind Dagobert's Revenge, our magazine. You know, it was like a name that we used.
Mm-hmm.
Lorraine, the double barred cross. But, you know, we hadn't done much as a group. And so what happened was Brian, my husband, and I, we decided to use the Ouija board one day to contact we contacted Jean Cocteau.
I can't imagine you using the Ouija board. That sounds dangerous. I wouldn't put this. I mean, this is the highest compliment possible, Tracy, but I would not put a Ouija board into your hands. You seem too smart, too tapped into this stuff. I'd be scared to do the Ouija board with you.
Well, I wasn't. I didn't know I was tapped into it back then. See, I could tell. No, I could tell that there was some sort of spiritual influence on my life that had pushed me in this direction of the Holy Grail. And I felt like it was my destiny almost to figure this thing out in a way that no one else had before. So maybe that's what made me think and try to contact one of these people who were was the head of the Priory of Zion, supposedly, Jean Cocteau. So I, you know, just contacted him to try to get some information from him about the Priory of Zion, about some of his artwork that had allegory in it. And so we did, you know, amazingly, we used the Ouija board, and it worked. But we weren't getting very good answers. But you could tell, like, something was happening. I mean, like, right away it started working, which was freaky to me. But it was mostly stuff in code, like numbers and letters, and he was speaking in French. And the things that he was saying, he was indicating that he was having a hard time communicating, that this was hard for him to do. And but we just kept slogging through it. I don't know. We did like 5 or 6 of these sessions, just trying to get any information we could out of Jean Cocteau. Finally,
hours.
And this went on over a period of weeks. Yes, yes. Usually at night.
Jeez.
So but finally, during one of these sessions, something takes over, and it's like a different power than Cocteau, and all of a sudden it starts moving really fast. The planchette was moving really fast, spelling words, complex sentences. And just, I guess, to shorten things up, we got told by an entity that we should really contact Baphomet with our questions. And furthermore, we were told that Baphomet had an interest in us and had, in fact, cursed us because of something I had failed to do for one of his minions. Like, there was this fellow I was working with at the time, Nicholas DeVere, and I had promised to help him publish one of his books. And Baphomet said that he was mad at us next book, like we said we were going to, or helping him publish it.
What?
And
this
I said,
came
so
from
why
the Ouija
do you
board.
Care? This all comes from the Ouija board. I said, why do you care if we publish Nick's book? And he said, because she is related. She, meaning Baphomet, is related to Nick. And Nick had, you know, all of his books were about his genealogy and how his royal genealogy goes all the way back to, you know, the gods of the ancient world and stuff.
Whoa.
So I thought that was very, totally interesting. And then, what happened was, like, years of sessions with Baphomet. We did it over and over again, and I got other people involved, and it almost never failed to work. There were some people that he kind of got shy around, and he would only give kind of cryptic answers because he didn't like those people. He didn't want to say things in front of them. But mostly, so much of it was things that I would never have thought of in a million years, never would have figured out on my own, really obscure things of ancient history. And connections between things that, yeah, again, I just would not have thought of before. So we got stuff about the real story of the Garden of Eden, for instance, the real story of the fall of Atlantis, Jesus' crucifixion.
I got to jump in because this is like my jaw is on the ground here. Have you released any of this stuff, or is this all going to be in the magnum opus? Because Let's start with that. I have a second question, but we'll start with that.
I'm going through the material now, and I got to tell you, the hardest thing is deciding what to release to the public and what to keep under my hat, because You know, this is stuff that is precious to me. And also, all these years, I have an element of embarrassment almost. Like, I don't want to see people to think I'm like Jay-Z Knight or, you know, channeling.
Yeah, you don't
Ramsa.
Want people to think you're a channeler. Yeah, I understand that. Channeling
and that, that's
life.
Where all my information comes, right? I don't want people to think that that's where it all comes from. But and it's not really where it all comes from, but a lot of my research into certain avenues did start out with something I heard from Bathman, and I would research it, and it would turn out to be true, you know? And so it was this amazing aid to my research that I don't think I could have gotten it any other way. Mm. And it still works, actually. You know, I don't do it as often as I used to, but as recently as a year ago, it was still working. So I still have this connection, I guess.
Yeah, this is stunning to me. I didn't expect this. I didn't expect to go down this road. This is very interesting. I understand your trepidation about the whole channeling thing because it has a lot of baggage. It has more baggage than O'Hare. But you're a very smart lady, haven't you? Didn't you consider? How do you know to trust the Ouija board? I mean, it just seems like. Even to get even deeper, what's your relationship with this entity? Because I don't know, I'd be kind of freaked out. I wouldn't trust it. But it sounds like you've developed a relationship with this thing. If this went on for so long,
you know, it did become like a relationship. I mean, it was like a friendship, really. And as far as trust, I would say I don't have trust really. And I had to learn that the hard way because this is the amazing thing, how easily you can get sucked into this, where, you know, when they're telling you amazing things that you wouldn't know any other way and you find out that they're true, you know, it's very easy to just believe everything that they say. But I did discover there was deception as well. Deception too. And also sometimes it was just to be funny. You know, he seemed to enjoy sending me down a wrong avenue, you know, or getting my hopes up about something. So I think that, you know, everything that everyone says about the Ouija board and trafficking with demons, in a way it's true, you know, it's certainly dangerous, especially because they can just play with your mind and try to make you do whatever they want. And I would say that's how, you know, the whole thing of, I said that we got involved in some ritual magic related to Baphomet. Yes, he actually dictated rituals that we should do. And that was really weird. I mean, it was a window into the way this stuff works that I wouldn't have had any other way. You know, so many people, if they do ritual magic, they join an order, they do the rituals that the order tells them to do, or they get home, and you got to wonder, well, who wrote these rituals, and how did they come up with this stuff? This is how you do it. I mean, if you want to get something that's real and powerful, you ask the spirits themselves, what do they want you to do to make them manifest, to make them do things? And they'll tell you. So I think that this is how all of these really powerful cults get started. And you can almost tell. See, now that I've had this experience, I can tell who's channeling and who isn't. When I see something written, I can tell whether it's channeled or not. When I see a cult operating, I can tell whether they're really tapped in to something from beyond the veil or whether it's just some egomaniac making it up on his own.
How can you tell? That would be good information for the listeners if you can share. How do you – or is it just sort of like a sixth sense you have that, you know, I couldn't do?
Yeah. No, it's a sense of – for me, it's like if you can see the light on things. You can see them shining, actually. Okay.
Interesting.
I don't know how to describe it, but yeah. Things just pop out at me now, and I can tell that they came from a demon.
Jesus.
So what's really interesting, I can see now, like, certain people who are involved in the personal development field, people who are, like, you know, do personal training, life coaches, people like that. A lot of them are doing it. And there's a lot of books in the occult genre where the writer writes as though he's getting this information from a book or something, but then he never actually cites the book. And, yeah, you can tell, well, he channeled it. So anyway, yeah, it's been a really interesting insight into how these things work. I really think that a lot of the secret societies start out this way, and how it can be that there's so many Knights Templar groups now, supposedly, or groups that are descended from them. Well, and people argue, you know, which is the right one, which one has the real charter from the Knights Templar. But it doesn't really matter if you look at it this way. They can go directly to Baphomet and get chartered that way. So there could be all sorts of, you know, legitimate Templar orders or descended groups that are still using the same power, and they don't need anyone's permission to do it because they've got the source.
Interesting. This is wild stuff. As I said, I did not, thank you for opening up about all this. I was afraid that you, you were going to kind of put me off because it seems like it's tremendous stuff. I wish I was on this cruise because I probably wouldn't let you get away from me because I want to know more about this. Did you experience one of the big things that gets tied to Ouija boards and people that use Ouija boards is the whole like poltergeist-like activity. Was it pure communication or was other weird stuff happening?
Well, there's been a little bit of weird stuff. And actually happens more when you don't talk to them for a while. They try to get you back.
Oh, God.
Like things moving, sounds, lights going on and off, a little bit of that. But mainly I haven't invited that much into my life, I think. I've kind of turned it off, and I think that's why it's not overwhelming. Because I really did, we had such a, you know, friendly conversation across the table, you know. So but that was one of the strange things about it. I remember remarking to my husband at the time, first time it happened, that, you know, I would have thought when this happened to me that I would be freaked out. But I wasn't. I was calm the whole time. And then the strange thing that happens afterwards is amnesia starts to settle almost instantly. And I would have to write down, I would have to write down notes immediately afterwards. I usually had someone as a scribe taking notes during the thing as well, because you forget it all, because they want you to forget.
Oh my God! I want to like dig into this material that was told to you. You got to get this out. Is that going to be part? Is that the magnum opus with additional sort of stuff?
Well, no. The magnum opus is like this major research project onto the Baphomet.
Okay.
But I did want to throw in some of this stuff that I got directly from the source. I thought it's interesting, and I think that the world needs to see it, especially in the proper context. I don't want it to be, another like Seth Speaks type of book. So I just wanted to put it in there along with all of this other, you know, real hardcore research stuff, so people will understand the concept of Baphomet in a way they never had before.
This is amazing. This is truly amazing. I worry for you because I worry about this presence, you know, that's in contact with you. Hopefully it all turns out okay. I'd be tweaked out. You're not tweaked out at all that this thing is, that you have an interdimensional friend of sorts? Because I'd be scared. That's maybe just my own personal fear factor.
Well, who knows? I mean, I've had quite a lot of bad luck in my life. I suppose you could say this has something to do with it. I don't really know. And I kind of feel like I just want to get this stuff all out.
Yeah.
I want to get it on paper. And then maybe I can move on to something else. You know, this has haunted me for a long time. And I just kind of want to be done with it.
Wow.
So,
well, you've been tasked by this thing to put the book out.
Exactly.
So.
Oh, you know, awesome. This is what I dropped the whole subject for a few years, really, because I felt oppressed by it. Like, I felt like this demon was almost riding me and whipping me and trying to make me a slave to publish stuff about it, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
and
about.
I was,
it's scary, yeah.
And I was just like, okay, you know, I want to do something else. but now, it's come to the point where I really just want this stuff to be published before I die or forget about it or something, before I lose all my files somehow accidentally.
Yeah, I could see something like that up.
2014 is the year that it's all going to come out.
Nice.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?